Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don, and I hope you enjoyed that segment with Francis J. Menton Jr. We found him very intriguing, and I just repeat, encourage you to go back to the Manhattan Contrarian blog at manhattancontrarian.com, and you'll find a lot of output from Francis that, if you like what you heard, you'll like what you read. So what have we got up next in our climate crazy segment, Jaspreet? There's a few British
a few
communists over there saying let's get rid of farmers, at least one. What did he say that upset you?
Well, this is former Labour political advisor John McTurnan speaking on GB News. I will let you hear from the horse's mouth itself. Here goes.
May or may not be right. I'm personally in favour of doing to, you know, farmers want to go on the streets, we can do to them what Margaret Thatcher did to the miners.
So just to be clear, John, you would, what, beat them up?
No, close them. I mean, there's an industry we could do without.
So, okay. All right. So this got weird. So you would do to farmers what Margaret Thatcher did to miners, which was, and you know, she
closed down industry.
Very heavy-handed police tactics, followed by what? Putting them out of business.
If people are so upset that they want to go in the streets and spray slurry on them, then we don't need the small farmers.
We don't need the small farmers.
Hmm. And you thought climate crazies couldn't get crazier. Now, you analyse this whole thing. Its genesis is around climate change, the whole machinery that's undermining the good work that small farmers do. Is basically big government is putting too much pressure on these farmers. And of course, this argument's about the inheritance tax that farmers are sort of upset about over there as well. And we'll have a guest on in a few weeks talking about that. But, you know, the arrogance of the man sitting there, had been paid as a parliamentarian, telling us we don't need farmers and we should all have corporate management of food production and we'd all be better off. Would have less choice, but would all be better off. Fantastic.
But we've been there before, haven't we? This is how it is. The circles have always been, the cycles. You see, Stalin did like the farmers. In India, we've had farmer protests recently. Ukraine, the Ukrainian famine, the Holodomor,
yep.
Man-made famine. All yep. of this, it's always comes down to the tiller, comes down to the person working on the ground. Because farming, at some level, Don, it's independence, isn't it? You're less dependent on the state.
Yeah,
at
that's
some
true.
Level, if it gives you independence, I'm not saying if you're a large farmer or small, but if you have your own acreage, you can somehow make ends meet.
It's property rights.
You can survive.
It comes back to property rights, and it's around competitive tensions that actually have to happen for the consumers of our goods and services to be getting the right value. And you will not get the right value if you have corporate farming controlled by big government edicts, which is what this guy was supporting. Of course, he comes from the extreme left of the political spectrum. He'd be an ultra hard left union man. So, you know, I was a union representative effectively for farming, but I actually had principles that were around property rights and competition. This guy would have the complete opposite to me.
This is why you have farmers in the UK heading out on the streets soon, and there's been built up over the weekend. It is heading out to a big protest tomorrow, Tuesday. We shall hear more about that in the following weeks. But this man said it all. When you say the quiet part out loud, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, the demographic of farm ownership in the UK is something I need to understand better. There's a lot of tenant farming going on, I gather. Maybe there's some sort of demography that we need to understand better for that next interview. But hey, look, we've even got one here, organic dairy farming, a natural fit for Maori. And I thought to myself, yeah, that looks good. I'll read that. And it's nice that I think it's Pāmu have got 19 organic dairy farms or 11 or something like that. But the kicker for me in that whole discussion, you know, you can do organic. You can do whatever you think is regen. You can do whatever you think is conventional. But there's nothing unique about any of it, as far as I'm concerned. We've talked about this before, but the kicker in there for me was, he said, and we employ all Maori staff. And I thought, oh, heck. That's separatism of the highest order. You know, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just get the person based on merit? But no, we're going back to our ways, our organic ways.
So this was on the ruralnewsgroup.co.nz, their website. And I read that article. And at one point it says, what sets this farm apart is that it's overlaid with unique Maori values, such as kaitia kanga and manakitanga, essentially caring for the land and people. So yep. Is that just one community? Is there nobody else? Is that that is not shared by anyone else?
Then? No, completely not. No, the rest of us are mad, oppressive, nasty, all the things that this guy isn't, or this organization isn't. It is so...
I can't believe I'm reading,
unreasonable. It's so unreasonable, this article, really. And it looked like a nice article until you read the guts of it, the bits that you and I are just talking about. And you thought, heck, we don't need this in farming.
You know, you hear about the West coming from India, and you hear about egalitarian societies and all of that. And then you see things are not what they seem on the surface. And this is just another example of that.
Yeah, well, they can have a tight-knit team. But yeah, look, when it's based on race, that's... In New Zealand, that just seems to be a bit weird to me. Call me old-fashioned. But I refuse to join the hikoi. They can hikoi themselves to Wellington. I couldn't care less. but when the Ministry for the Education has to put out special notice talking about what they expect from their schools on the way and trying to not be political about it, when you know that some schools are out there supporting it, we know we've got things rotten to the core. And by the way, climate crazies, look, we've got to change this for a moment. The nonsense in the Parliament of New Zealand the other day when the youngest MP got up and did the haka, so choreographed. Her boss, Rawiri Waititi, was instantly on his feet. The older Murray MP with the moku was grinning from ear to ear. But instantly, all the Labour Party MPs got up. Instantly, the gallery got up. The whole thing was so choreographed. And yet it looked like it was spontaneous by just one person. No, they had that planned. And Jerry Brownlee, the Speaker of the House, should have instantly, he did shut the House down. He should have suspended the whole Labour Party, the whole Maori Party, and all the Green Party, and said, you don't come back in the House. Because they were... And when they went over to the other side and faced off with people, like to David Seymour, just wrong. Just the most obscene gestures and, you know, activists in Parliament. And the worst thing that came out for me was I watched the Bolt report the other night, and he was saying how disgusting it was, sort of thing. But then I watched Fox News a bit later, and they were saying, God, isn't it great having New Zealand a Parliament like that? It's fantastic. I wish it happened in the States. I mean... There was such a variance of views. Most people haven't a clue what was going on. But to me, that whole episode indicated a breaking down of the parliamentary process. It was obscene.
I will take your word for it, Don. You've spent time in Wellington. You've walked those haloed halls. I haven't. But if you say it was choreographed, I'll take your word for it. Yeah.
It just, that was absolutely planned. And look, I am very worried that Prime Minister Luxon's out of the country and he is trying, like former Prime Minister Jenny Shipley put David Seymour under the bus in the media yesterday. So did former Minister Chris Finlayson. They're saying he's creating division. Actually, the division started in my life. It never seemed to be apparent until the formation of the Waitangi Tribunal in 1976. Some activist judges came along and we started what was called the fiscal envelope process. So reparations, it was $1 billion fiscal envelope. And those of us that thought, well, they had a property right, let's have that reparation made good. We would have thought by 2024, it's been well and truly been made good time and time again. So it's not money. What is it? They've had their pound of flesh and they're still not happy. And worse, Jasper, I'm really ranting. The Maori elites are pocketing the cash while they've got their underclass, and they do have an underclass that they support. They create the activist underclass while they sit up there in their high chairs. I mean, it's a horrible place to be in New Zealand at the moment, with this angry, angry lot that are supposedly, nice people wanting to have a nice life in New Zealand. They're just creating division. Sorry, that's an opinion. It's not climate crazies, but I just...
I could see it was driving you crazy. I'm glad you got that off your chest. And I agreed to a large extent on. I, of course, don't have the sense of history that you do, very obviously. New kid on the block. But some of these things just seem wrong.
Well, they're counterproductive. The country should be in... With all the reforms of the 70s and early 80s that I talked about and the reparations, we should have the most harmonious country in the world by now. It's not like everyone's on Poor Street like we used to be, including my family. We weren't very well off 50 years ago. So, I don't know. They'll never be happy.
Well, let's change the road. We have time just to sneak in one more climate crazy, because I think Don and I will have to do a full one-hour segment sometime soon about the climate crazies that have been going on at COP29 in Azerbaijan, Baku, this week. I'll just make one observation there, that depending on which website you look at, anything between 55,000 to 75,000 people are there saving the world for us. The Argentinian delegation has gone home, or have they gone to Mar-a-Lago? I don't know. But the prime minister has flicked his muscle, told them to get back out. So they are gone. Who else? What else has been happening there?
Well, it's hard to figure it out, actually. There's depending on which side of the media you want to come from, you believe that there's a whole lot of action, and then you go to the other side and there's a lot of inaction. So... I hope more inaction occurs than anything, to be honest. But New Zealand's got their reporters there, and of course they're all from the alarmist side of the climate change.
100%. I think Mark Dalder is there. He's come from the Oxford School of Climate Journalism. He's done a course there. So there's bits and pieces that need to be tied up. But one thing they're working on this time is a global carbon credit.
Yes.
That is something they're going to be ironing out at the COP, because regardless of what you think, it's no longer about the climate at these conferences. All they're doing is talking the money. Where is the pie coming up and where it is going to?
And they want to have their the nationally determined contributions sorted and bedded down by February. And they want to know if they can get the $100 billion of annual pledges from the developed world up to about 1.something trillion. I'm just saying, there you go.
Can I sneak in one more? I know we're just really short of time, but Prince Harry has been awarded with the Environmental Award by the Time magazine because he set up the Sustainable Profit Travel List. This venture is a non-profit that provides people booking travel with emissions and sustainability data that can consider the lowest impact options when they travel. I'm sure he's never taken... any private flights in his time, Prince Harry?
I think that story tells you he takes lots of private flights. And in fact, even just to go to a polo training or competition not far from home, he took a private jet. I mean, one flight at a time, they're saving the planet, these do-gooders.
Yeah, but it's time to get on to our next guest, who actually is a climate realist. Yeah. And we will be speaking to retired Waikato University professor Willem de Longhi about the report that he has recently presented on the coastal hazards on the Kapiti Coast, and contrasted with the one that the council has there, the one from the consultancy Jacobs. And we'll talk to him more about what he thinks should be happening at Kapiti Coast instead of the alarmist narrative that is everywhere at this moment. So thanks so much for joining us on Greenwashed. Give us a moment and we'll be back with Dr. Willem de Longhi.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.